The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Hey, come out to the Gladstone Hy-Vee and see me. More importantly, see the Hy-Vee Supercart. You ever seen this thing? This son of a gun's 10 feet tall, street legal, motorized shopping cart. The giant-sized grocery cart can drive on city streets as the driver sits up in the kiddie seat while transporting up to five additional passengers in the basket. And you go up to it, and it's got a special QR code, which you scan to enter for a chance to win a big prize package, including four Chiefs playoff tickets, a parking pass, and a $100 Visa gift card. Then you can also see me, and you can register to win an autographed football, either signed by Trent McDuffie or Juju Smith-Schuster. And they have great deals on all the items that you need for your watch party or your tailgate. So I will be there. And how about this, Nate? This says your name written all over it. Thursday only, Hy-Vee has a 12-hour sale with huge savings throughout the store, including a wild Alaska crab clusters for just $9.99 a pound. Delicious crab. So stop by and see me today in Gladstone, 7117 North Prospect, from 11 until 1 with the Hy-Vee Supercart. Right now we have Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Hello there, Jesse. How are you?
Good, Stephen. How about yourself?
You know, I'm all right. It's a lot to do today. It's very fun, though. I'm looking forward to going out to see all the people in the Northland, hopefully to stop by the Gladstone Hy-Vee and give away a couple of autographed footballs and have some fun. I love being around the listeners during a big week leading up to a playoff game. Everyone's all fired up for this game against Jacksonville on Saturday. Let's start with what I thought was the big news yesterday. Andy Reid, just play that opening part so we don't mince words. We hear exactly the way he phrased it. This was Andy Reid giving the injury report during his opening statement yesterday out at Arrowhead Stadium.
All right. The guys that won't practice today, really it's just McColl. We're just going to back off him a little bit and see if we can't get it feeling better. He's been pushing it hard and it's not responding the way that that he wants it or you know, we want it to. So we'll back off on that. So we look forward to the challenge of everybody else will practice. We look forward to the challenge of playing Jacksonville. We know they're a good football team. They've only lost one game since we played them. So I mean, it's they're playing real good football, we know they're well coached, and so we're going to get ourselves ready this week with some good practices. The other two I probably should mention today are Clyde and Jody will practice today. So. We're going to ease them back in, just see how they do, try to get them back in the swing of things. Anyways, with that, time's yours.
Coach, when it comes to McColl, it sounds like it's been a very unique situation with maybe being able to play, maybe not. Do you guys still have optimism that he'll be back at some point during the postseason?
Yeah, he does, and we do, yeah. You want to try not to take steps back. It's not that we've taken steps back. It's just that it's not getting where it needs to be, where he can go. So my feeling is that if we just back off on it and let it rest a little bit here, and do his rehab and that he has a chance to get better. But we don't, he doesn't want it. We don't want to put him out in a bad situation. So where he can't play.
All right, Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Do you still hold out hope that we will see Mecole Hardman this postseason, or did that kill your hope yesterday hearing Andy Reid describe that the Chiefs are backing off Mecole Hardman because he's not responding the way they want him to?
Yeah, I don't think it's good, right? I mean, you figure that, especially with him sitting out that Raiders game, you thought, okay, that's giving them extra time. You give him the extra week. He would start to practice this week, and you could ease him back into the game plan this week and then potentially have him more for the future weeks. But that doesn't sound good, and this is the positive for the Chiefs, which is some of these guys are not Mecole Hardman. Obviously, you trust him with more of the route tree. He had some really big games for the Chiefs earlier this year. That 49ers game is one I think about immediately, where he really had some great run plays, the pop passes, all those sorts of things. But the Chiefs do have other options, and you know, you have to give them credit because last game against the Raiders, they were down Sky Moore, they were down Mecole Hardman. They basically had four receivers that they wanted to play, and they dominated that game with just a bunch of tight ends and different setups that they could do. So we've seen Kadarius Toney. He kind of keeps getting added more and more plays. A lot of his plays are the plays that Mecole Hardman runs, the pop pass types of things that we see from the Chiefs. So, you know, I think they have options. I think they would rather have Mecole Hardman. I think they would like to obviously have him be productive in this playoff setting. But the fact that he can't get out there and practice this week does not leave me very encouraged. And we know Andy Reid's history with these injuries. He likes to ramp guys back up. He likes to put them in there for a little bit for one game and then get them going. And if Mecole Hardman can't go this game, you're really running out of games to be able to do that. So I would say that was probably the most discouraging news from yesterday. But like I said, the way that the Chiefs are set up, the way that they have things going right now and this coaching staff they have and the weapons they have, I think they can overcome it. It's a bummer.
Nate Bucati, do you have any injury questions before we move on to a different topic?
Yeah, so how big of a news is it that Fortson and Clyde Edwards-Helaire are back in practice? In other words, do you even think there's much of a chance that either of those guys ends up on the active roster this weekend?
Probably not, but you know, it can't be overstated. You know, I was talking with somebody a couple days ago, and I said, well, it seems like Jody's probably going to be out for the year, so for him to at least come back to practice, it leaves you thinking that there's a potential for that. But, you know, it's kind of like, what is the downside for that? The Chiefs have to make some roster moves to be able to open up the 21-day window for those guys. But if they wanted them at all, at some point you're going to have to return them to practice, get them on that 21-day window and see how they look. So, it's probably not bad for the Chiefs to have them be able to come back to practice or at least give them a look. But how much they will help, how much that will affect things, who knows? I mean, it is kind of, we're talking about this, like you're taking these pieces of people, right? Like Jody Fortson showed himself to be a really good red zone weapon and a guy that you could throw to in that setting and kind of a little bit of, you have particular plays for him and you have Kadarius Toney has particular plays for him. And it's sort of like how many ingredients you're giving Andy Reid and this Chiefs offense to be able to work with in the playoffs. So if those guys come back, it would probably be a surprise at this point. But, you know, opening the window at least opens that possibility up, and the Chiefs could do that without much disruption other than just making a couple roster moves. So we'll see how that progresses over time. But I would be surprised to see him this week, but crazier things have happened. And like I said, especially with Fortson, if you get him back, you have at least a red zone weapon there that the Chiefs have shown an ability to get the ball to and use in some critical situations.
So it sounds like another guy that had been banged up, Frank Clark, is good to go. And we were talking about this yesterday. I get sacks on everything. We're not talking about pressures. There's other things that defensive linemen do to make an impact and disrupt plays. But I still find it remarkable that since they started keeping this stat in 1982, Frank Clark is fifth all-time NFL sack leader in the playoffs. The only guys ahead of him, Willie McGinnis with 16, Bruce Smith with 14.5, Terrell Suggs, 12.5, Reggie White, 12, and then Frank Clark is tied with Dwight Freeney, Charles Haley, James Harrison, Clay Matthews, Lamar Woodley, and then right behind him, Richard Dent and Von Miller. That's, again, I know sacks aren't the only way you measure a defensive end, but still, he has had some great moments in the postseason, and that's, I mean, I don't know. He could end up, if he has the right kind of postseason, being number two overall, right? Sacks in the NFL in the postseason since 82. That would be wild. I don't know.
That is wild. It is a crazy number you look at. And You know, you sort of compare those two players because you think about them since they've been with the Chiefs, like Chris Jones and Frank Clark, and how we think so differently of those two guys, and yet in the playoffs...
Jones is searching for his first postseason sack.
First postseason sack, and that'll be a big storyline. I mean, you would assume that Jones is going to get one this week and kind of get that monkey off his back, and to his credit, he's been open and honest throughout the whole offseason. I remember in OTAs he brought up the Bengals game unprovoked and just said, hey, this is what's motivating me to be better because I had Burrow a couple of times in my grasp, couldn't get him down, and if that happens, the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl, potentially go and win that particular thing. But
and yeah, he had a big-time Super Bowl against the 49ers. He made a huge impact, Chris Jones. You got to give him credit for that.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, sacks are not the end-all, be-all, and we know Chris Jones gets double-teamed a lot. He gets a lot of attention. So some of these sacks that Frank Clark is getting a lot of times is, you know, it's because teams are sliding protection over toward his side. But, yeah, no, it's... It is fascinating with Frank Clark, just because that really has been, especially the Super Bowl year. I remember, you know, they made the big acquisition to hit for him. You know, the regular season played out how it did. He was okay, but probably not what they wanted. But then postseason came and Super Bowl time came, and he was going after people. So the pass rush will be a big thing for the Chiefs. I mean, that's been something we've talked about from the offseason until now. I think they ended up, what, second in sacks in the NFL? Something way up there in the numbers. But still, whether they can get pressure with four guys or not is going to be a big thing in this postseason. It's always been a big thing for the Chiefs because when that happens, that turns into a completely different defense.
Marco just gave you the thumbs up without even looking it up that you were correct. So, you know, if he has that immediate reaction, you can trust your instinct there. Okay, hey, Nate, you want to have some fun or you too busy over
yeah.
there?
Yeah. Okay. No, I like having fun.
Let's have a little fun here. Now, I'm not talking about body of work. I'm not talking about what they've done in their career. I'm not talking about what they're going to do the rest of their career. I'm talking about right now. We live in the moment. All right? Rank the eight remaining quarterbacks. Just who's the best from best to worst or confidence level in how well they're going to play this weekend, however you want to do it. But how do you rank these? I love to rank quarterbacks. Nate Picati, you're going to do it too. Right now, write it on your scratch paper. And I want to see.
Write it down in my notebook.
Don't say nothing. I want to see if you differ from Jesse Newell. Marco is typing something into his phone, so maybe he's coming up with this. Oh, he was writing something down on the whiteboard. Okay, we're all getting in this. All right.
Yeah.
You tell me, Nate, you tell me when you're done. Marco's looking to the sky. He looks like the thinking emoji right now. He has this hand on his chin. He's trying to figure things out. Are you close, Jesse? Oh, you're thinking about
close.
Something.
We're really going to school now.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's what I like.
It is school.
That's what I like. All right? And don't be afraid to push back at Jesse Newell, Nate. If you differ, you tell us. Okay. You tell us why. All right?
Okay.
We'll start easy. We'll ease into this thing. Well, no, we'll go the other way. Who's number eight?
I think it's a lot easier at the top than it is at the bottom.
Right, that's right. Well, Nate. We'll
why
take
you,
your word for that, Nate.
Why do you drop these hints when Jesse's around, too?
Mark that tape.
Use that language.
Jesse, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Jesse, who is number eight? Who is in last place in your rankings?
Brock Purdy.
Brock Purdy has not done enough to impress Jesse Newell. He has him at number eight. Marco shaking his head in disagreement. Nate Bucati, who do you have at number eight?
Yeah, I'm going Brock Purdy.
Brock
as well.
Purdy. Marco Marquez clearly has a differing opinion because he's shaking his head.
Let's hear
Marco,
this.
Who do you have at number eight?
Go with Daniel Jones.
Okay. All right. That's not crazy.
They're both system quarterbacks. Though,
they both kicked ass last week, but that's fine. You have more belief in Brock Purdy than Daniel Jones right now.
I do. He's got nothing to lose at this point playing for it.
All right. Okay, then who's number seven? Jesse Newell.
Yeah, Daniel Jones.
Okay.
Okay, that's easy.
Nate.
Yeah, Daniel Jones. Yep.
Then who's your seven?
Brock Purdy.
Okay, so there are
Flip
seven
up.
And eight. Okay, now we start to get interesting. Who's at number six? Jesse.
I'll stick with Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence coming at number six. Nate Bucati.
Dak Prescott.
Dak Prescott at six.
I almost dropped him further than I already did.
Easy. Marco Marquez.
Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence.
Jesse.
All right. Who's at number five, Jesse?
Dak Prescott.
Dak Prescott.
Yeah, yep, yep.
Nate, who's at number five?
I'll go Trevor Lawrence.
Okay, number five?
Dak.
Okay, so Dak is, so you guys are pretty close. All right, who is number four, Jesse?
Yeah, this is where it gets a little crazy. Jalen Hurts for me.
Jalen Hurts is number four. Yeah. I agree with that. Nate?
Yep, that's exactly what I have.
Marco. Oh, come on.
Josh Allen.
Whoa. Hold on here.
Whoa.
Really?
Oh, yeah. We're talking about right now?
Yeah, that's fine. He 3 fumbles and 2 interceptions.
Absolutely. Okay. If there's one thing that, and I was going to reveal who's next for me, but Hurts doesn't turn the ball over, and although he's not built like Josh Allen, he can still run the football. So I got Hurts ahead of Allen playing right now, although Hurts has been injured.
I think just to let you know, before we get to your final list, mine would be Mahomes 1, Burrow 2, Allen 3, Hurts 4, Trevor Lawrence 5, Dak Prescott 6, Daniel Jones impressed me 7, and then Brock Purdy 8, even though I've been impressed with Brock Purdy. Daniel Jones running the football, that could be a problem. But I still think the Eagles are going to win. Okay, so now we are up to number 3 for Jesse Newell.
I will. I know I'm going to. I listened to the show last hour, so I know I'm going to disagree with Nate here. I'll take Joe Burrow at number 3.
Joe Burrow at number 3. Nate, you have Josh Allen, I bet?
Yes. I hate to break the news to you, Stephen, but I'm exactly the same 8 as you.
I don't like it.
Well, now you know you're wrong, Stephen. Right, that's too bad. Let's rethink things.
Rip that 8 apart. Marco?
It's Hurts. Yeah, Jalen Hurts at number 3, yeah.
So number 3, and then so you have Burrow at 2.
Yep.
I have Burrow at 2. Nate has Burrow at 2, but you have Josh Allen.
I have Josh Allen.
So for those that would say, man, he's turning the ball over too much, that ball security, that it's in the red zone, what would you say to that?
Yeah, so I would say, a couple things. I mean, I think the point that Marco made was a good one, which is how much is he battling through his injury with the elbow thing?
Yeah, we got to forget about that.
Yeah, he just has played through it like nothing's happened and has been really good. You know, look at some of the productive numbers. Here's it to me. I'm kind of viewing this based off of upside, and this is sort of where I think the Jacksonville game gets a little scary for the Chiefs, which is, to me, and we've talked about this lots of weeks, turnovers can be really fluky. You know what I mean? Like last year we were talking turnovers for the Chiefs, all these tip balls, you know, things are happening, Mahomes is throwing the ball up in the air to somebody, and then it just shut off. The faucet shut off on those turnovers, and the Chiefs coasted through the second half of their schedule, were really good. And the reason they were really good is because the upside was always there with their offense and their pass offense. And then when the turnovers shut off, which can be fluky week to week, they were really good. That to me is Josh Allen. Like, okay, can you get some turnovers? Yes. Has he turned over recently? Yes. If the faucet shuts off on those turnovers, which it can from game to game, that upside is so high with him that he can go out and beat anybody. And obviously would be the favorite against any team, I think, right now on a neutral, even the Chiefs, or that game would at least be a pick'em. So I think the upside with that is just crazy. And even though we're talking about the 4 or 5 turnovers this week, we wouldn't be talking about another week because sometimes he won't turn it over. So I think he is, I would pick him ahead of Burrow, even though with, you know, we all watched the Chiefs-Bengals game, and Burrow was really, really good when they needed him to be really, really good in that stretch.
Yeah, and I like for Josh Allen, his ability to run the football is a big difference maker. But then I also give some extra points to Burrow because, you know, he got his team to the Super Bowl, and I think that means something. You know, he won on the road in the championship game, even though it made me sick to my stomach. And he's just a killer. But then, you know, he didn't have a great Super Bowl. He was. I was like, where was that guy the week before? Okay, so the other question I have, you mentioned upside. Trevor Lawrence. We mentioned this earlier. This is the first time since 2004, 2005, that all 8 quarterbacks in the divisional round are under the age of 30. Dak Prescott's the oldest at 29. Here you have Trevor Lawrence. It's been Mahomes, Burrow, and Josh Allen. Those are the three we talk about in the AFC. And really in the NFL, those are the three best guys going right now. Now here's Trevor Lawrence. He has the pedigree. He now has a big comeback playoff win under his belt. It looks like he's got the right coach. Do you? And even if he loses, this is a big step forward for him this year. Okay, big step forward. They won a division. They won some important games, and they got into the playoffs and won. Do you think at some point he is going to enter that group and enter the conversation of Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Joe Burrow? Does he have that kind of upside? Or do you still look at him moving forward? He'll always be maybe a step below or a group below those big three.
No, I think he's below. I think he's established himself sort of well below. And I think you see now, I mean, this is sort of why we always talk about the marriage of quarterback and coach. He seems to be in a really good situation now with Doug Peterson, who can look at his strengths, help him out. I mean, a lot of these things are straight from the Andy Reid playbook, some of the concepts that they run. And things they do to sort of prop up the passing game. So, I think, you know, coming out, obviously he was well-regarded, and that first year is kind of just a burn year when you have Urban Meyer as your coach and you kind of throw that away. But I think a lot of this just depends on the merits. You know, he still has some pretty glaring weaknesses to his game, you know, like he's not good under pressure, and he doesn't use his legs like a Josh Allen does, even though he seems like he's a pretty athletic quarterback. And he is mostly kind of a guy that kind of centers the middle of the field and isn't hitting all the routes, if you will. So right now, I mean, I think that they're doing a good job with what they have, and the potential of the passing game, it showed last week. You get down 27-0, and that's why we always talk about the trump card in the NFL. The trump card is a good passing offense, because if you're up, you can win. If you're down, you can win. If you're trailing, you can win. If you have turnovers, you can win. I mean, it defeats everything else, because it's such an important part of the game, and you can hurry up and come back in the passing game as well. So I think that is sort of the scary-ish thing for what's going up against Jacksonville, is that they showed last week that even if they are down, they have this sort of pass offense that can come back. And you can't forget about ETN. I mean, Jacksonville doesn't block that well, but he's been really impressive so far this year. But the offense and the pass offense and Doug Peterson and the aggressiveness Doug Peterson is likely going to show. I mean, we've already seen him onside kick to start a game against the Chiefs. He goes for it on fourth downs. I mean, that sort of mindset coming into a game when you're already an underdog and a coach who's not afraid to put everything out there. That's the sort of thing where, you know, I could at least envision, we've seen this in the past with the Chiefs, like you get Arrowhead. Arrowhead's great. Arrowhead is amazing to play in front of. But you get down 7-0 and you start to feel the nervous energy. You start to feel that. You know what I mean? And so the way that the Jacksonville Jaguars play with Peterson, and the way that he potentially could put the cast doubts aside and put things on the line against the Chiefs and kind of put the pressure on them. That's something I could definitely see happening in this game, and a reason at least to worry going into this one.
You know, one of the reasons I brought that up is and Nate, you could speak to this because you were, and you've come around, but you were early a Josh Allen naysayer. His first year wasn't very good, mm-hmm. Josh Allen. And Trevor Lawrence's first year wasn't very good, mm-hmm. but then I think we look at it like, well, Urban Meyer.
Okay. We understand why, yeah.
And so then just looking at the passing numbers, Trevor Lawrence's second year was a lot better than Josh Allen's second year. Just throwing the football. Like this year, 25 touchdowns, 8 picks, 66% completion percentage, 4,100 yards. I mean, those are pretty damn good numbers for your second year. And Josh Allen, in his second year, 20 touchdowns, 9 picks, 3,000 yards, 58% completion percentage. But from year 2 to year 3, he went 58% to 69%. He went 20 touchdowns to 37. He went 9 interceptions to 10, but went 3,000 yards to 4,500. I mean, he exploded, right? And so I don't think that there's going to be that gigantic of a jump for Lawrence next year or even after that. But I do think it's interesting. You can make the argument that his first 2 years were better than Josh Allen's first 2 years. And I think they're getting ready to put more talent around him. I think it's going to be interesting to see what Calvin Ridley is. We forget they traded for him, and he'll be on the team next year. They've still got resources to put more talent, more receivers around him. I guess that's a long answer for me saying, I don't know if he's going to be able to crack this elite group. I mean, he's got to beat some of them. He has a chance now, right? He has a chance to go and beat one or two of them head to head. But Nate, before we get back to Jesse, like, what do you think? Where do you put Trevor Lawrence in all this, in this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I've got him ranked fifth behind Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is another guy that I didn't expect to be ranking this high, even coming into this year. I think that that's one of the fascinating things about the quarterback position is seeing which guys grow and improve. Because as you mentioned, Josh Allen, I didn't see it, man. The accuracy wasn't there. And he has surpassed what I thought he was going to be as a quarterback. Although I do think he's taken a bit of a step back this year. Maybe it's because of that injury. I don't know. But for me, Lawrence says, yeah, he's knocking on the door trying to get into the club. I think he took a big step by what he did against the Chargers. I think he took a step ahead of Justin Herbert, whether that's fair or not. If he goes out and finds a way to pull off an upset this weekend, I think he's in the club. I mean, or at least very close to being in the club. So I don't put him there yet. I think he's got to get better. But if he makes the kind of improvement that guys like Allen and Hurts did, I think he's right there with those guys because he seems to have most of the physical ability that you need, and he's got some of those leadership qualities, too, that he showed this past weekend.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you the same question, Jesse. We're going to take a break, though, about the coaches. How do you rank the coaches who are left in your confidence level? Because let's be honest, we saw some coaches with some pretty good reputations have some big-time brain farts on national TV over the weekend, right? I mean, I don't think John Harbaugh – hey, look, the Ravens competed, and they were in that game, but I don't think John Harbaugh had a great end of the game. I don't think his clock managed. I think it left some to be desired.
I was signaling for timeout on my couch.
I mean, look,
I was like, timeout. Come on,
and guess what? John Harbaugh is a great coach.
Yeah.
But he can also make mistakes.
Yeah.
It's okay to criticize great coach. I feel like some people, oh, no, he won the Super Bowl. He can't criticize. Well, I don't think he had his best end of game. I just don't. Right? I think we can all agree to that. You know, Mike McDaniel is a young first-year head coach, and I think that he'd like to have a few things back, like knowing what down it is and what personnel to put in on fourth and one with a game on the line. I think there was a lot of bizarre coaching decisions, and so I'm curious. Nate, you do that too in the commercial break, and I want to hear what you guys have to say about confidence level in the coaches that are left in this. Look, like Brian Daboll, he's a rookie. But he's everyone's pick now for coach of the year, and so he's got something to him. Is Nick Sirianni the better coach, or do you think more of Brian Daboll? So those are questions I have. But something very important: you have seen the movie Silence of the Lambs, haven't you?
No,
you've never seen it either.
Oh boy, no.
Nate Buchady and Jesse Newell, can I set up a screening for Silence of the Lambs?
Off season, let's do it.
I mean, a movie. I know a movie that wins that many Oscars. You have to see it at some point. That's right. Okay. So now I was going to play this for you and see if you think that
you can still play it.
Bosa sounds like Buffalo Bill. But I'll play it anyway for the people out there.
Yeah,
because we like to laugh. Nate hasn't even seen this movie and he thinks it's funny, don't you, Nate? You like it?
Yeah, I mean, you've played enough of the sound bites over the years that
for my actions, obviously.
I think
but
I get most of the references.
It's a heated game, and I'm hurting out there. I'm playing on half a leg. I'm getting dragged to the ground, whatever. Could hurt me, along with screwing our team. And yeah, maybe some of them weren't as blatant as I thought, but... I don't know. It's. I think there just needs to be more accountability on. I mean, if I say something to them, I get a $40,000 fine. But if they blow a call that ruins an entire team's season, they get to. They're probably back in the locker room after the game, like, I got that. Oh, yeah, got him. 15 yards. What a loser. I guarantee it. That's what they're talking like in the back. Whatever. Power trip. I'm sick of those people, and I'm gonna just about my third F-bomb so far. Sorry, but man, oof.
Not only does that allow me to make the comparison between Jamie Gumm, Buffalo Bill, and Joey Bosa. We also get to hear his bizarre ramblings about the officiating, which it looked like you were befuddled listening to him right now.
I was trying to pinpoint who it sounded like. I think Nate can back me up on this one. That's a little Zach Greinke in there.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, a little bit of Zach Greinke.
Very deep voice, but the ideas and thoughts maybe. Oh, yeah. All over. Yeah, Zach.
Well,
yeah.
the voice was kind of a... When you talk to him, it is kind of
right.
This. And,
okay.
We can pull that up.
Yeah. He has some issues with the officials. I don't know if you
just
picked up on
just
that.
A little bit. Yeah. Maybe thinking about some personal vendettas there. Yeah.
Oh, boy. I can't play that enough. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll find out how we rank the head coaches left in the postseason. And then Jesse Newell has told Marco he will give him his guaranteed locks to get him back in the winning column after Marco has been taking an early pummeling.
Yes,
he's
sir.
Ready to bounce back and attack the divisional round. Back after this on WHB. Man, I can't wait to hear this whole song. I'll listen to this driving to the Gladstone Hy-Vee. I love this song. A very young and uncertain Stephen St. John watching this video, very curious about Christie Brinkley as she got out of the car. Very unsure about my thoughts and the way it made me feel. Still, I'm still unsure about how this song makes me feel even to this day, Jesse.
How did Billy do it?
Hey, man. He could sing. Yeah. You either sing or you make make a woman laugh, and hopefully you got, you know.
Yep.
Oh, Billy Joel. All right. I'm really interested to hear how you rank these. This is very difficult. A lot more difficult than the quarterbacks, I think. Nate, did you do your homework in the commercial break? Guarantee he didn't.
Oh, there was supposed to be homework?
Rank the coaches as far as your confidence level.
Flashback to middle school.
In the divisional round. Jesse Newell, you can start at one or you can start with eight. What do you want to do?
We can go from the back again. More drama, I think.
Okay.
I think we all know we're going to say number one, right?
Number one's Andy Reid.
Yeah, we're all going to say number one.
Is anyone different?
We're
all
going to say number one, Andy Reid, right?
Big Red.
You know what? I'll do this. Well, who's number two?
I will go with Sean McDermott.
Nate.
I'm going Shanahan.
Gotta change that now.
Like agreeing with me.
Oh, man. This is not going well for you, Steven.
This
is not going well for you.
Who am I missing?
Are you trying to find someone to replace Kyle Shanahan now?
Yeah.
I gave you the answer. It's okay. You can take it.
I'll go with Shanahan. That's what I was going to say. So I'm stupid.
It's okay.
Right. Okay, then who's number three?
What about Marco? We can get Marco.
Oh, Mark, did you do it?
No, who's
number two?
Shanahan, too, with you guys. He's gotten Garoppolo and Brock Purdy. Well, not yet Brock Purdy, but on the doorstep of an NFC championship game. We're going to talk about – I had this question in my head yesterday.
Talk about it.
The 49ers, we're going to – who can we – who? What's a team comparable to the past teams in NFL who are like, and they're always there, always at the doorstep of making a Super Bowl, but never could get one. Now, the Bills in the 90s,
for a
they
long
made
time,
it to the game.
For a long time, the Broncos.
Yeah.
They went to a bunch of Super Bowls before they...
Well, no, even just a bunch of championship games, conference championship games. Because if you think about it, he's only been to one Super Bowl, but
Well, the Chiefs in the 90s, they only won one championship game, but they were always contenders and always there. But they could never get there. I mean, every year during the 90s, you thought, okay, this is the year. And then at the end, like, oh, no, it wasn't. Oh, they'll get a different San Francisco quarterback and it'll work out this time. Okay, so who is number three, Jesse?
I'll take Shanahan three.
Okay, so it wasn't too crazy. No. Okay. Nate?
I'm going Zach Taylor.
Oh, man. He, McDermott hate.
This is interesting to me. We've all – so my number three – because you got – we got two other guys that have won a Super Bowl that we're not mentioning yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to – I think I'm going to get – well, I put a lot of stock in that, so I'm going to get cute. I'm going to say Doug Peterson.
Okay.
Because
I don't hate that at all.
Because now he's – it's almost like – oh, was that just some wild fluke in Philly with the Philly special and Nick Foles and they beat New England and then, you know, things fell apart and they ran out of here? What he's done in this first year with Jacksonville immediately getting them to the playoffs and winning a playoff game, that's kind of backed up like, okay. Well, he really knows what he's doing. But then, go ahead. So who do you have who's next on your list, Jesse?
I mean, I guess it's Nick Sirianni. I mean, who knows, right? I mean, they were really good all year, but I don't know that I'm just confident in his coaching decision. So it's sort of like what we're measuring on here. Like, you can't be a crummy coach and be as good as they were.
See, this,
but I don't know that, like, if you are staring across at Nick Sirianni, you're thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I'm doomed. So
I have him last because I think he has the best roster, but I just, not that he's a bad coach, but like, Mike McCarthy won a Super Bowl, and now he's going to Dallas, and he's won a lot of games in the regular season, and I think he deals with a lot. I mean, Dak Prescott hasn't always been healthy. He's got an owner breathing down his neck.
It sort of depends what you're kind of basing this off of, because I understand what you're saying, like with Doug Peterson. Like, I think there's going to be moments Saturday where it's like, you're looking across, and you're like, oh.
He scares me.
Oh, yeah. Like this dude is going to go for these fourth downs that other coaches wouldn't go for,
but I feel
and that
like
makes you uncomfortable. And he's going to get the most out of Trevor Lawrence, and he knows Andy Reid's game plan, and he knows, you know, it's just, it gives you a little uncomfortability if you're a Chiefs fan, just because you're like, this guy has been there before, done it, and he knows what he's doing, you know?
And I feel like most people feel like McCarthy hasn't done a good job with. I think he has. He has a lot to deal with, you know? He's an NFL head coach, but he is crazy expectations. Look, they all do. But, I mean, he's won a Super Bowl. I don't know. And so then I think – but then after I like McDermott better than Taylor. And then I think Dable – and it's not fair to penalize Sirianni for having a great roster, but I think Dable has – I've been so impressed with what he's done because I did not look at that team and they go, they're going to the playoffs. I thought the Eagles were going to the playoffs. I didn't think they'd be that good, but I did not have – the Giants in the divisional round at any point in this year.
Yeah, Dable's in the Sirianni category to me. Like, I don't know that much about him, but it's like, if you did that during the regular season, you're a good coach. Like, I mean, there's something going on well. I know the Eagles roster was more stacked than the Giants one is, but, you know, I just, it's sort of incomplete. You know, you're not real sure yet. It's so not the sample.
So who's your top five? Reed? And then you went number two?
Reed, McDermott, Shanahan, I guess Sirianni. I mean, do I really get off this list and not have Zach Taylor? I don't know.
And no Doug Peterson?
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, who do you leave out? You talked about McCarthy. I'm not – it's weird to say that if they made the Super Bowl. I'm not sold on Zach Taylor. But, Bengals, a lot of people, you know, some of the numbers said they're going to take a big step back this year, weren't going to make the playoffs, and they did. So, you know, it seems like they are adaptable, adjustable, and they've been able to – you know, overcome that even after a tough start. So this is tough. I mean, I know you were talking with Adam Teicher last hour about, you know, do you take Burrow or Josh Allen? And it's like the loser doesn't really lose here. I mean, there's some here. I don't see the dunce, as to use the reference. I don't see the dunce in the playoff picture still available when it comes to these coaching staffs.
So then, Nate, who was your top five?
So I've got Reed, Shanahan, Taylor, Peterson, McDermott.
I think I'm
and honestly,
maybe I do Peterson. I might go. Michael Garozzo has just texted, and he says Peterson's number two.
Well, there you go.
All right. And then he said Garozzo's is where Chicken Spadini began.
There's no doubt about that.
Right. What about that's Marco? You got something?
I got a lot. What
well,
do you want?
Easy.
Andy Reid, Kyle Shanahan, Doug Peterson. Yeah, I'll keep going on with Zach Taylor, number four, and then Brian Daboll at five.
Right. No McDermott.
Wow. No McDermott.
Wow.
Oh, I like why. That's fine. That's a bold move,
you know,
by you.
He could be like Nick Sirianni, vice versa. He does a lot in the regular season, does a lot in regular season, can't do anything in the playoffs.
Outlandish.
Sirianni, we have yet to figure it out.
In one month, we'll revisit.
I've seen enough from Brian Daboll as a coordinator, and
yeah,
he's made me a believer in his first year.
Marco's impressed. All right. So, Jesse Newell, you tell me, look into your crystal ball, please.
Okay.
How will this game play out on Saturday at Arrowhead Stadium?
Okay, so this is unfortunate because I was with colleague Sam McDowell as this Jacksonville game was going down, and I told him my first blush thoughts about how I thought the Chiefs would be 10-point favorites against Jacksonville. I like their chances to cover. And the more I've thought about it, it's kind of going back to that Raiders game I told you guys last time. The last game I said, hey, my first blush thought was the Raiders keep it this close. You know, Stidham's playing okay. But then I overruled myself and said, no, there's no reason the Chiefs should not blow them out. I remember you were happy about that, Steven.
Right.
And that's how it played out. They were not challenged in that game. I think my second blush thought here is that this is going to be closer than the spread. Now, Chiefs are the better team, and don't get me wrong, like, out of all the teams still in, like, them getting Jacksonville at home, you know, it's just in front of them. Like they should win the game. This is as good of a matchup as you could ask for in this particular round. But you go back into some of the stuff, you know, Peterson's been really good against the spread in the playoffs. He's been really good getting his team, that sort of thing, ready to go. And I just talked about the pass offense, the sort of thing that, you know, can travel and can make up for mistakes. And I like the fact that Doug Peterson probably is going to be aggressive. And that sort of nervous energy I talked about at Arrowhead, I think is a thing. It's hard for me to get out of my mind, you know, like even the previous 30 years of Chiefs stuff, even with the Mahomes era and the Reid era and how they've, you know, won playoff games. But even some of those, you know, you talk about the Houston one or you know, the Cleveland one. I mean, some of these things, they get dicey, and you do get that nervous Arrowhead energy. And I'm not sure that it's like, again, all the fans are out there, and they go nutso, and they help the team. But sometimes if there's expectations on your team, you get to these matchups, it can be, you can sense a nervousness energy about the whole place. So I'll go with this one being closer than the spread. I think the Chiefs win. I think they pull out in the end. I think Mahomes should have a field day like he did the first time against Jacksonville. The problem is, you know, the one thing you can't really predict is how exactly they're going to come out and play. And we mentioned this last year in the Bengals game. The last thing on my list, I would have said the Chiefs are not making the Super Bowl because it would have been because Patrick Mahomes played his worst game of his career, basically, or the worst half of his career in the second half. So I just think there's some of these that the nerdy numbers guy over here is telling you, so there's some intangible things here that might be working against the Chiefs in this particular matchup, but still think the Chiefs win probably by about 7 points. But I could see certain parts of this with Jacksonville's passing game, and obviously the Chiefs maybe just having a little bit of that nervous energy that could make this thing dicier than what Vegas might predict.
Who do you think is going to win between Buffalo and Cincinnati?
I will stick with Buffalo, and I think it's fascinating to talk about this beforehand, but like, are we all going to, like, if this is Chiefs-Bills in Atlanta, that atmosphere is going to be unbelievable. I mean, it's going to be, like, Nate can talk about it. I mean, remember the KU-Missouri game they played as an exhibition over at T-Mobile Center, Sprint Center at the time? But, like, half the crowd is KU, half the crowd is Missouri, and it's just wild. An exhibition game, and it was wild. If this game happens in Atlanta, it's going to be half Chiefs fans, half Bills fans. You got red, blue, and then you've got all these Bills fans who, again, their whole existence is beat the Chiefs and get to the Super Bowl. Beat the Chiefs and get to the Super Bowl, and finally they're going to get a chance to do that in that sort of setting. It just sets up to be like one of those games, yeah. right? And and to the point where I'm not even sure, like, would people talk about that afterwards? Like, should this be the setup moving forward? I don't personally think so, because I think this would just be a colliding of all the forces to have Chiefs, Bills in Atlanta, where you would just have this insane game. But I don't know. I mean, I could sort of foresee us having this conversation in a couple weeks that should this be the permanent way if every game is as good as this one? But that would be really, really fun if those two teams made it there.
I think the atmospheres that I would compare it to that I've had a chance to be a part of, and even this had a chance to be better, was obviously the first Missouri-Kansas game at Arrowhead with everything
Absolutely.
On the line. It was half and half. And then getting the chance to go to a few of the Mizzou and Illinois games in St. Louis, the football games, when, you know, Gary Pink was getting things up and running and Illinois was pretty good. And it was like that. It was, no matter what happened, someone's going crazy, and it was packed and it was a great environment. Those have been some of my favorite experiences as a football fan.
Absolutely. The ones that come to mind to me is Maui Invitational, where there's not much on the line, but if you're in Maui and you've got KU Duke, like, I talked about the nervous energy that sometimes comes in the playoffs. It's the opposite of that, because you're trying to one-up this other side because they have about as many fans as
right.
you, and they're being really, really loud. So it's like the two sides are trying to drown each other out, and they're not worried or nervous or scared or looking around them at the other only Chiefs fans to wonder how their emotions should be. They're just trying to one-up the other side and give as much energy as possible. So, man, I mean, listen, I hope it happens, because that would be that could make for one of the most memorable games in NFL history just based off the atmosphere. And then you put Allen, Mahomes, everything else involved with that. That would be really, really fun.
I want you to be happy, but I hope Cincinnati upsets Buffalo in the games in Kansas City.
If you're a Chiefs fan, you know, that gives you the best chance to advance. And then five straight AFC Championship games at Arrowhead, setting a new record. That'd be pretty unbelievable, too.
Nate will drink to that. We'll take a break and wrap things up after this on WHB. Nate Buchanan, good job out of you. Why don't you say goodbye to Jesse Newell, silly?
Goodbye, Jesse Newell, you silly.
Wow, so Nate's rolling around in there.
That was heartfelt, Nate. Thank you.
Jesse, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate the conversation. Jesse Newell providing great coverage of the Chiefs with the Kansas City Star. And thank you for listening. Come out and see me at the Gladstone Hy-Vee today from 11 until 1, 7117 North Prospect Avenue. I'll be there with the Hy-Vee Supercart. And I'll have autographed footballs to give away, signed by Juju Smith-Schuster and Trent McDuffie, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Border Patrol has been brought to you by Walker Medical Linen Services, setting the standard in healthcare laundry services for hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in Kansas City. Walker Medical Linen delivers laundry you can depend on. HLAC certified to the highest standards. It's Walker Medical Linen Services, online at walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.